Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And I'm Dr. Lisa. I give a shit. I do. Hey, thanks for listening to us, listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest station in the world. I've listened to all of them. So anyway, just before we get going, let me just remind you that we need support. We need emotional support, but we also need financial support because we're doing like all this great stuff. We're a nonprofit. It's tax deductible. You're thinking about taxes, right? So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate and give us some cash, not large amounts, any cash, just enough to make us feel emotionally supported. That's not very much. Anyway, so first of all, I just want to complain because I'm really pissed off about this fucking Joe Biden thing. I'm sorry, you know, women, feminists, you call yourselves feminists. You know, these are people, I don't care. You're going to hate, if you hate me, I'm sorry, but I just got to get this out there because I can. But women that are calling out Joe Biden are totally perverting the whole idea of the Me Too movement and all that other crap. And what they're doing is trying to call attention to themselves, if you ask me. They are perverting the Me Too movement with their own fucking egos. So just shut the fuck up. We got to get a clown car out of office and you're not helping. All right? Feels so much better. Thank you. Thank you for listening. And thank you for listening to that. So this is like a really complex day for me. I don't know if I can handle it. I have two guests on today and I don't usually, but I had two really special people and it's all happening. All this shit is happening at the same time. So I made it all into one show. But the first half is going to be one of my favorite artists and humans, Colin Radcliffe. He's a artist who is having a really good big solo show at Equity Gallery. And the second half, starting at 2:30, is going to be Noah Becker, who is the founder of White Hot Magazine, and he started this whole series of parties at the Jane Hotel rooftop, which I've been going to, and I want to talk to him about that. So we will be getting to that later. So we got to get through Colin and make sure we get all the shit in that I want you to know about Colin. I want you to know so much about Colin. Colin knows that I'm always like failing over him. I'm going to see if he's never going to get embarrassed. He's sitting right here. Hi, Colin.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Don't you ever get tired of me like just mooning over how fabulous I think you are? Do you ever get tired of it?
I love it.
You do, right?
Very much.
you know why I don't mind doing it? Why I'm comfortable doing it? Because I feel like you handle it very, very well. I don't feel like I'm just pumping you up or something. I feel like it actually lands in kind of a balanced way. I feel like I get the appreciation back for it and that it actually helps encourage you, which I think your work's so great that I'm happy. I feel like I'm doing something worthwhile for the whole planet. So, okay, enough about us. I met Colin a couple of years ago. He's part of the people I know here in Bushwick. And he's only 25, but his work is so sophisticated, people. So I'm going to tell you about his show first. The show that he's doing is called Left on Red. It opens Thursday, April 18th. The opening 6 to 8 p.m. at Equity Gallery, which is 245 Broom Street. And the show's on view from the 18th to the 27th. So Colin has two bodies of work, one that he started with when I first met him a few years ago, and it's now evolving into this other body of work. One is he works in ceramics. One of the body of work that I met when I met him was these creatures that I'm going to let him describe. And now he's sort of working on these ceramic cell phones, but they're really amazing because that, you know, technological high tech thing done in ceramics in this like really funny, very sophisticated but cartoon way almost. And the texts on them tell stories. They're all very, very personal stories. Here's a sentence from Colin's artist statement, just a little bit before I introduce him so I can get some of the topics, issues, intimate facts about him on the table before I turn it over to him to tell you in his own words. Chronicling my successes and failures in love, my work is autobiographical, focusing on love, sex, intimacy in the context of both queer digital space and the pursuit of relationships obstructed by a chronically diseased body. And let me tell you something. Colin is so hot. And like the idea of chronically diseased body, like it's so weird because if you meet him and talk to him, you don't know that, but there's something in his work that has this magic of humor, joy, and whatever that feeling or inspiration that one would get from having, as he says, a chronically diseased body, as he puts in his own words. So often the ceramic phones pull directly from interactions he's had on dating apps like Grindr, Jacked, and Tinder. Why others play with tropes of queerness, digital dating, and chronic illness from working hands into wet clay. This is what he says. The very same hands that held and caressed a particular lover or exchanged intimate text messages, I cultivate an imprint of tenors, humor, emotional intimacy, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there we go. So, Colin, why don't you tell us just what you're going to be exhibiting and kind of what the show's about.
Sure. So I'm going to be showing approximately 30 ceramic cell phones, and they're all going to be on the walls of the gallery, and then there'll be a few pedestals with a few of the ceramic figures on them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so anyway, you know, it's interesting because, so when I first met you, we talked about your chronic illness, which you're going to describe briefly here so that people can understand it. But the thing about it that knowing about your illness and looking at your work, it just was, like I said, magical the way that you were able to translate your experience of your illness into the work, and not in a sad, depressing way, in a way that was meaningful and generous and hopeful. Is that how you feel somewhat about your illness?
Definitely. I think my work in general is very reflective of who I am as a person. So even though I usually have something going on, I'm still pretty positive or feel good about something. I think that translates most of the time to the work.
Yeah, and I think that's what you put out first about you, and I think that's what people love the work, and I think that's what people respond to. But I think that the brave. I hate that word bravery because it's not the right word, but that willingness to expose yourself to the vulnerability of exposing yourself with, you know, I'm being literal when we're going to talk about your illness, but there comes through something that, let me just say this, is way deeper and more meaningful and arresting than any other 25-year-old, I think, would be able to put out there. So that's what I'm going to say about that. But I'm also saying what's interesting, we can get into this in a minute, but what is also really interesting is that when one views your sculptures of creatures, which are human sort of, not always, those seem much more directly connected to your illness and your physical being. But what's really interesting to me as a pretend shrink is that now that you've gone through that, maybe you've expressed it, maybe you've integrated that whole thing into yourself more, where you are now focused on the relationships, which are more of the Noah Becker just walked in. It's fine. I'm so glad to see Noah. Noah, this is Colin. Yes, sit down. We're going to be discussing Colin's work, but I'm glad you're both here together because I want you to hear about Colin's work because it's so amazing. His show's opening. I want you guys to meet, and then we can all talk about, as I promised our listeners, at 2:30, we'll start talking about White Hot and the parties. So Noah, put on those headphones. Let's get Noah set up. Put on the headphones. Put the mic in your face. I'll turn you on and we'll get right back. Yeah, we'll get right back to Colin, the interview with Colin. We're going through his work. So Colin, the thing is that, so what I was saying was that I think it's really interesting that maybe you've internalized all the things about your physicalness and your body and your illness, and you are now ready to transcend that. And that's maybe why you started using these cell phones. Does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
Do you think that the doing the work with the figures, did that help you process your illness in any way, or?
I think so. I mean,
because
it's so much about my physical body and the effects that has on me,
mm-hmm.
and my ability to form relationships with other people, making that kind of work where it's based off of figures of either myself or lovers that I've had,
mm-hmm.
is a way to cope and heal.
So can you explain your illness briefly to us so that we can sort of have a sense of it? And I want, listen, you guys, if you go to see Colin's work, you should really understand what his illness is, because I think it really comes, it's so meaning, I don't know, it just really informs his work, and I think it's something you should know. So go ahead.
So it's an autoimmune disease, but it's not something that there's not really a reason why you get it. They don't really understand, but it's, for me, it's ulcerative colitis, and it's technically a systemic disease, so it affects my whole body with inflammation,
mm-hmm.
but it's concentrated in my colon,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of symptoms that all kind of bleed into each other, but it's a very long list, people can look it up, but the big ones are you lose a lot of weight because you can't absorb nutrition, you are chronically fatigued, you're usually in a lot of pain and discomfort, and some people call it a quality of life disease because it impairs your ability mm-hmm. to live a very comfortable life.
Mm-hmm. And has it affect? I mean, you work all the time on your work and your job, but mm-hmm. does it take? Are you tired? Do you feel it a lot?
Not as much as I used to. So before I was diagnosed and got on medication, it was very difficult. I would sleep 16 hours a day.
Oh wow! How old were you when you were diagnosed?
22.
Mm. Not that long ago.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's much more under control now.
Yes. So I take a medication that I self-inject every 2 weeks, and it dampens my immune system.
Mm. So you've had to learn how to adjust to it. It's been a big...
Definitely. I've had to know when I was capable of going out to do things, like go to an opening or see a friend, and when I needed to stay home and just rest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, how is the, so have been doing the work has helped you? How is it with, so your new work is about relationships because it's more focused on the cell phone. So how has that, where does the illness fit in with the relationships? Like do you, when you start dating somebody, do you have to tell them about it, or how does that, what is that like for you?
It's usually not necessary to tell someone, at least not initially.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because it's not a major factor now, because I feel well and the medication I take is very effective.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear.
But previously, sometimes I wouldn't even bother pursuing a relationship because I didn't feel well enough to do so.
So maybe that's another reason why you've been able to move from the figures to the cell phones, because you're more focused on the relationship instead of the physical being and integrating all that.
I think that's part of it.
Or maybe you just don't like having people in the same room.
I love people.
Yeah, you do. You do. So I wanted to ask you, I thought it would be really fun if we could talk about, since you've been, you've been somebody who's had relationships on cell phones since you were an adolescent, right?
Yeah, since I was about 16 was the first time I downloaded dating app.
A dating app when you were 16?
Yeah.
Wow. So I thought maybe it'd be interesting to tell us old people, or I'll speak for myself for sure, what the experience is like when you have like dating apps to meet people, like from such a young age.
Mm. I think it was actually very beneficial for me at that time because I wasn't out and there really weren't many other queer people in the town that I lived in.
Where did you live?
I lived on Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
In Bethpage, small town.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a way for me to actually meet and speak to other people that were having the same experiences as me, which I think was very helpful for my confidence and my development as a mm-hmm. queer person.
Mm-hmm.
And over time I would delete and, get it back again on the phone. But I've had them for, there's also been a lot more dating apps over time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty, most people my age have something on their phone.
Right. But I mean, like, what's it like? Do you ever meet people out in real life?
Occasionally. Most of the conversations that I talk to a lot of people, but most of the conversations will stay just digital and I never meet them.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, like, if the conversation goes on long enough or it seems like I might get along with the person and we want the same thing at the same time, then we'll meet.
Mm-hmm. But does it ever feel like, I mean, it sounds a little like, of course it sounds like it could be a little empty, or is it just efficient? Let's get Noah on here because I want to, Noah, do you use dating apps? Do you date?
I'm sorry?
Do you use dating apps?
How do we know if anybody's listening to this?
How do we know?
Yeah.
We can't ask Noah about it because he dates. He's a popular guy.
Is anybody listening to this at all? Like, how do we know if anybody at all is listening to this?
I don't know. We're not thinking about it.
Okay.
We're not all thinking right. of that. Doesn't matter. That's irrelevant.
Okay. My neuroses. Oh. Anyways, how are you doing?
I'm good.
Good. How are you doing?
Very good.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys got to
I'm
meet.
Glad too. Where are you showing?
At Equity Gallery.
Where's that?
It's on Broome Street.
Oh, okay.
In the Lower East Side.
I think I've heard of that.
Yeah.
It's a great
If you're listening in, don't you have a phone? Don't you tell people to phone in or something?
Yeah, we're going to do that when we get to you. Okay, oops. back to Colin. We're going to give you till 2:30 because I really want to focus on your work and you. Did your family know that you... Were you comfortable being queer growing up?
No.
Oh, so what was that like for you?
It wasn't that I wasn't comfortable with myself.
Right.
It was more so that I didn't feel like I had to come out or that a person should ever have to.
Mm-hmm.
Because that kind of makes it as if it's not a normal thing.
Right. Yes. Right. Of course. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why don't more people say that?
I don't know. I mean, I felt that way for a very long time, even when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I probably knew when I was 12 or 13 that I definitely wasn't straight.
Right.
And then I actually told my parents just about 2 weeks before I went to college because I figured if I don't tell them now, I'm probably just not going to tell them.
How did your parents, like, what kind of relationship did you have with your parents that they had no idea?
It's funny. They said that they didn't, but I feel like I never tried to hide anything.
But how, what kind of relationship did you have with them? They didn't, did you feel like they didn't know you? Were you trying to hide, you weren't trying to hide it?
I wasn't actively trying to hide it, but I wasn't doing anything either that would make them think that I was.
I don't even understand. Like, did you go to the prom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went with my best friend.
And was that a girl?
Yes.
So were they thinking that you were hanging out with chicks? That those were... Well, I could understand it, but were you trying to hide? Because I could see, like, if you had a lot of girlfriends, probably get along great with girls and instead of the macho guys, yeah, on the football team. So they probably thought, oh, well, he's got plenty of girls, so he gets along with girls, and he's a young guy, just hasn't, like, gotten into fucking them yet. I get that. But like, the thing is, like, how did you feel? Like, did you feel like your parents didn't care, they didn't understand, or what did you feel? Like, were you not close to your parents, or, like, how did they not know?
Well, I wasn't nervous about telling them, maybe a little bit just because of the actual action of mm-hmm. having to reveal something about yourself that may not be known. Mm-hmm. But one of my mom's brothers is gay, and then my dad is a high school guidance counselor, so I didn't really have any fears or reservations about telling them because I didn't think, I assumed that they would be understanding.
Okay, but since, were you close to them in other ways, or did you feel distant from them? Did you feel like disrespected, or they didn't care about you because they didn't know that about you, or...
I think I just felt that they didn't really know me yet, but it was also at a time where, because I hadn't really explored that part of my identity sexually or romantically, I think most queer people have a similar experience where in middle and high school, because they're not out meeting other people like them, they're almost behind in a way. So I wasn't, I was just coming of age.
Oh, okay.
I didn't really know myself in that way.
That makes sense. And I'm thinking this, so with your illness and all, do you think that your parents, because you seem to handle it so well, that your parents must be supportive of you, right?
Oh, very.
And they've really taken that, done, they do what they can.
They're very loving.
Yeah, I get that feeling. So do you think there's something about that has sort of made you more intimate with them or closer to them or... In some way, has that changed the relationship at all?
Being ill?
Yeah. Not being ill, but like processing it and the experience of coping with it and finding out about it, not just...
I think so. I mean, I was actually more nervous when I realized that I was definitely not well and getting sicker. It was an interesting time. I was in college in my senior year. And over the period of a few months, I kept getting sicker and sicker to the point that, like, I kind of assumed that either I was dying or something was really, really wrong with me.
You were in college, right? So you couldn't eat. Was it eating and pain? And
yeah, I was afraid to eat because it would make me feel so sick. And then all these symptoms would come up. Mm-hmm. And I just felt terrible all the time.
Was everyone worried about you?
Most people didn't know.
They still didn't know.
Yeah. I was good at hiding it.
All right.
And then
I believe that somehow.
I got to a point where I was like, well, if I don't go see a doctor and tell my parents that I need to go see a specialist, then I don't know what's going to happen to me.
Mm.
So then I told them very gently or lightly that I needed to go see someone for something that was going on with me. And they immediately were like, okay, let's go.
Oh, okay. And they were there the whole time, like through. There's probably a lot of tests. And
Yeah, it took about 3 weeks to get an official diagnosis, but I mean, I was pretty sure I knew what was going on before I even went to the doctor, and then the doctor told me flat out what he thought was happening before all the tests came back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad that you have that relationship with them.
Thank you.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have three.
Three brothers and sisters?
Two sisters, one brother, and they're all younger.
Oh, wow. You're the grown-up.
Yeah. I was the first born out of anyone in my family.
Oh, so are you close with them too?
In some ways.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're close. We're all very different.
Yeah. What are the, how so?
One of my sisters went to school for math and engineering and works for a bank/insurance company.
Mm-hmm.
And my other sister goes to school for fashion design.
Oh, that's kind of what you do to some degree.
Yeah. I think the two creative ones. And then my youngest brother is really into working out and might join the military.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, we're all pretty different.
That is really weird. So how are you feeling about this show coming up? Are you excited?
Yeah, very excited.
Yeah. And how long have you been working on this now?
I only found out actually on my birthday of this year that the show was going to happen.
Fabulous. What's your birthday?
February 27th.
Oh, wow. So you got to get on it.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, it's like, it's clay. It's not clay. It's porcelain clay or something.
Yeah.
So you got to deal with like the firing of it and all that.
Yeah. It takes about a month for each piece to be complete.
And all that stuff. All right. Well, what else? Anything else about the show or the work? Are any of the people that you've chronicled in your work going to be there?
Some of them, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've invited a couple of them personally.
And do they know that they have work made about them?
Yes, the ones that I invited do know.
Oh, good. So I definitely want to come to the opening because I want to find out and then like grill them.
You're more than welcome to.
So how many people at the opening will be people that you've slept with, do you think?
Not that many.
Not that many? More than two?
Probably like three or four.
Do you think they're going to have a fight?
No.
Will they be
not.
Jealous?
No.
Because they all so. Are going to be with, they'll, yeah. Okay, so this will be really good. I just want to say once again where it is, and then we're going to do a station ID, and I'm going to give out the call-in number so people can annoy. Maybe somebody will call in and annoy Noah. He seems like mm-hmm. the kind of guy that would have a call-in.
I want to have confrontations with people phoning in.
Yeah, I think you will. That's why you guys are so great together, because Colin is calm. And people can fuck with
well,
you.
Well, I'm calm, but I
people,
enjoy
people
good,
will fuck with you.
I want a three-dimensional Facebook comment section.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Yeah. So anyway, let me tell you about Equity Gallery, which is on 245 Broome Street. Who's the director of the gallery?
Michael Gormley.
Michael Gormley, who's a wonderful gentleman that I met. And the opening, it's called Left on Red. R-E-A-D, there's a pun in there, opens Thursday, April 18th, 6 to 8. And I have all the information on my Facebook page, so you can check that out. And I just want to remind you that you are listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit on Radio Free Brooklyn. Radio Free Brooklyn, the greatest radio station in the world. Please go, and you know what you guys should do? You should download our apps, because then you can listen to us anytime. We have 70 great shows, 60% are music. You can learn so much. We cover every topic, every kind of thing you could ever want. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/iPhone or /Android and download your app. Okay, so on to Noah Becker. Hi, Noah.
Hello.
That's not very good. No. That's not very good. You can do better than that. Act like you're enthusiastic. Noah doesn't act enthusiastic. You're a pretty even keel kind of guy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pretty well, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Do you get in fights with people? I can't picture you. I picture you like you and Michael Anderson, you guys could have an argument, right?
Well,
you guys are close enough.
Different personality than me.
You guys are close enough. You could yell at each other.
Yeah, I think that's happened.
Yeah, I could see that, right? Mm. Screaming and yelling.
I'm not going to physically get into a fight with him.
No, I don't think so. He's so big.
Right.
You could get in a fight with Colin. You could
beat up Colin. I'm not getting in. I'm not here to fight anybody.
I wonder if I could beat Colin.
Probably.
No. So anyway, before we really get in, I want to tell you about Noah. Noah is incredible. Noah is a multi-hyphenate. He is the founder, editor-in-chief of White Hot Magazine of Contemporary Art. He's also an amazing jazz saxophonist. He has his albums out. He's played with important people. And he's also an incredible artist. You've made some really great paintings lately.
Thanks.
You've really kind of gotten into a new thing, a new style, right?
Thanks, yeah.
What's the deal with that?
Springtime.
It's like
the weather's improving.
More weird landscapes or sort of like...
Yeah, it's a series of landscapes, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you should go. I put all this stuff online. Do you, like I like to say, do your own fucking
I was
research.
Looking at his ceramic smartphones. Those are ceramic, right?
Yeah.
They are, yeah.
Yeah, very interesting.
Very interesting.
I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so anyway, the thing is that, and I wanted to tell people about White Hot because I was doing my research today. Like, you have, like, some really intense stuff in the... You guys got to look at this magazine. Do you know this magazine, Colin?
Yeah, of course.
You do?
Oh, you do know it?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, see?
I'm always amazed at who knows that.
No, Colin's on top of things. But still, I mean, it's known. And, like, that article by Donald Cuspid totally blew me away. Donald Cuspid... I'm going to say this because it's not always artists. I'm going to say this in my dumb way or like my like simplistic way. He took what is that work?
Are you talking about his most recent article that I published?
Yeah, yeah.
That was about Raphael and Jackson Pollock.
Yeah, so he compares Raphael, you know, this classic Renaissance, right? Artists, like, you know, just, you know what that work is, to Pollock. And Jackson Pollock, and it was phenomenal. I mean, how long has the topic been potentially been around? And Donald Cuspid, you know, I kind of was like, yeah, Jackson Pollock's overrated. He hasn't stood up to the test of time the way the Renaissance painters have. Now I agree, or according, like, it really made me think about that again.
I had lunch with Donald the other day.
I saw.
It was interesting. He was a student of Adorno.
Who's that?
Theodore Adorno.
We don't know.
Oh, okay. Anyways.
Do you know Colin? No, we don't know.
Okay, well, people out there in Radioland know. Otto Dix was a friend of his,
yeah,
the painter.
I've heard of him.
Interesting person, but I find I have to take notes a lot.
No, I mean, the guy's really fucking brilliant and a great writer and, like, just a famous, like, one of the most famous art critics.
Well, it was a question. There was a number of people like that when I was living in Canada. I read people's books.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, I ended up publishing them.
Oh, okay.
Or artists that I was familiar with, and then I ended up becoming friends with them.
So Donald Cuspid is somebody I would not want to have a conversation with. I would not want to have a conversation about art with him.
He's a very very cosmopolitan person.
I'm extremely
cosmopolitan.
I'm sure.
Also speaks fluent German and, you know, different stuff like that.
But also, there was a really really smart review of a friend of mine's work. I wrote it down. I'm trying to think of his name. Pasquarelli, Richard Pasquarelli. I've known him since, like, I showed we showed together in 97, like our first shows. And the review of his work was, like, really smart too. It was... The stuff is really smart on there. That's what I'm saying. And you don't always see that in art writing. So I just want you guys to know that about White Hot. But we also I wanted to talk to you about, like, what's going on with the parties, because I think it's so interesting that I was telling Colin about this before you got here. So I want to tell my listeners. So the thing is that Noah, the founder of White Hot Magazine, has also started this series of artist parties. It's a weekly series.
Every Tuesday night at the Jane Hotel in the roof bar.
Right. The rooftop, which in the summer when it gets warmer is going to be, I mean, it was already really, it's spectacular. It's a great room, great people, and they're really great parties. And the reason actually that I got excited about them so much is because they reminded me of these parties that I used to go to in the late 80s, early 90s. That Bear Jones, and I was surprised you hadn't heard of Bear Jones. We got to get you
get me caught up on that.
Yeah, I'll get you caught up on that. But Bear Jones, who died at age 53, was...
Oh, great. I have something to look forward to.
He was a heavy-duty alcoholic.
Oh.
A really interesting guy, but heavy, heavy, heavy-duty alcoholic. We saw him go down, believe you me. So, you know, that's controllable. Don't worry about it.
I don't actually drink that much.
Yeah, no.
So throwing a party is a lot easier if I'm not tanked.
No, I mean, this is, but anyway, there were all these people. He was one of a very, he was one of Warhol's people. And he was also really good friends with Johnson, the guy.
Ray Johnson.
No, the Page Six guy. Richard Johnson.
Oh, Richard.
So he would get things placed all the time. So he knew a lot of people. And after Andy Warhol died, it was around the time that I broke up with the guy that I'd been living with for 7 years. I was, you know, just 30. And I needed to find a social life. And I started going to these parties. I wasn't even making art or anything. I just went to these parties. And they were these really amazing parties that were full of all the people that had been left in the wake of Andy Warhol's death, like all the people that had been around him, like Ultraviolet and Tiny Tim. Do you know him? He would be there. And like all these like crazy. And Hoop. Do you know who Hoop is?
No.
Hoop was at my wedding. I mean, Hoop actually. Anyway. So, but there was a certain authenticity. That's the point I'm making. There's a certain authenticity, and I think that's something that you captured in large part because of your personality. I'm just going to say that.
Right.
So I just wanted to hear about
my party personality.
Your party personality. Oh, I want to give out the phone number so people can call and harass you. This can't all be like complimenting and nice here. Somebody's got to.
Yeah, come on.
The call-in number is 718-928-9732. 718-928-9732. I spoke to a bunch of you people at the last party of this past Tuesday night, and you said you would call in and harass Noah.
718-928-9732.
Did I say that correct?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm just
718-928-9732. Call now.
Do you have any queer people that you think Colin would like
call
to
call often?
Do queer people come to those parties? Do you think Colin?
Well, that room used to be RuPaul's apartment.
I had no idea.
It used to be RuPaul's penthouse.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Was it a residential building then?
There's some video of it on YouTube, but it was like really bare and you know, bare bones room then. It wasn't like, I think it was early 90s or something like that. But
so was that before he was famous?
Famous. That room was queer friendly before I started throwing a party there.
Yeah, you got to come with
my party.
Come
isn't
with me,
specific.
Colin?
My party isn't specific.
Okay.
My party isn't specifically for any group of people. It's for people who want to go to a party.
No, I just want to make. I'm trying to get Colin to like meet people in real life. That's all.
Oh, I see. Well, you have to schedule that with him.
Well, you know. I'll make an announcement
we
when we're going to go.
There's couches outside in case people want to just fall asleep.
Yeah, there's plenty. It does have a like.
So we're talking about the rooftop party every Tuesday night at the Jane Hotel. People might have tuned in and they're like, "What the hell are they talking about?"
You're really good at cueing in our listeners. I forget that they're.
I used to run. I actually ran a radio show.
Did you?
Yeah.
Where?
In Western Canada.
Oh, really? What was it about? You have a good voice.
Oh, thanks. It was when I clear my throat. It was mostly jazz records.
Oh, music! You should get a music show here. Pitch a music show.
Good idea. I was I was going to bring my saxophone, but I had to put it in the repair shop.
Oh.
I've also left my phone charger somewhere. So my phone's almost dead.
Oh, well, we don't have a... We
things
don't have
that any. People listening to this really need to know about.
About you in particular.
Yeah, it's
so
like
what?
My phone charger and Joe Biden. Those are the two most...
I already... Did you hear me complaining about Joe
no.
Biden? No, I was already... Well, I wasn't complaining about him. I was saying, fuck you, to all those people are perverting the Me Too movement by complaining about him.
Are you pro-Joe?
I don't, you know, it's not about Joe. I just wish people would just fucking shut up and stop talking about things that aren't. The thing is, it's like the Me Too movement is important. Whether Joe Biden touches you in a non-sexual way is just not that important. I touch people in a non-sexual way all the time. People
well,
touch
you have
me.
To remember Joe Franken, what is it?
Joe
Al Franken?
Yeah.
Al Franken, right? Not Joe Franken.
Al Franken.
Al Franken. He was taken out by pantomiming grabbing a woman's breasts.
Yeah.
Joe Biden is like rubbing and smelling and, you know. I actually think Joe Biden would make a good president and I would vote for Joe Biden. But the problem is that it's trial in the media.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The minute they have a little taste of the Me Too thing, it's big news, you know.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing, but I don't think they should be. It's cannibalistic. It's cannibalistic. We're you know, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't mm-hmm. be. You know, don't focus on that. Focus on other
Joe
shit.
I think Joe Biden just had kind of a strange style of greeting people and being nice to people. I don't think he's genuinely a creepy individual.
No, no. And no smoking in here.
Oh, I'm not. This is. It's,
what
I'm
is that?
I'm vaping.
No vaping in here. No vaping in here. Okay. You're gonna. If Tom Tenney walks in, I'm gonna be dead meat.
Okay. All right.
Why isn't somebody else calling in and complaining about
this?
Guess
I'm thrown out.
No, you're not thrown out. So, what was the inspiration? How did you organize? How did you get the Jane Hotel? Jane Hotel to agree.
Sorry,
with that.
I just got it. I was like,
The rooftop of the Jane Hotel. How did that come about? It's really swank. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's swanky. I collaborated with some people and I like the way they dress over there. They have those little butler thing. They have that kind of like old world.
Old. Classic, you know, New York.
It's like a Wes Anderson movie over there.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
So I liked that. I thought that was cool. I wanted to have a party in that kind of an environment, you know.
Well, I love the idea of like a weekly party because people know, you kind of can get to know people and have mm-hmm. them come there. And like the thing is, the only way, do you go to parties a lot the way I
see? Can I be honest?
Yeah.
I don't see parties happening in the art world
right.
The art world proper. I'm not talking about like people that want to be artsy and put on
people that have part. Yeah, right, right.
Not people that want to put on a Roy Lichtenstein costume party or something like that.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But like, you know, the art world.
Right, right, right.
Which is what I'm part of or enthusiastic about or friends mm-hmm. with or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, people used to go to Studio 54. And
right.
It was artists and celebrities and all that. And it's very world famous and probably stereotypical of New York nightlife. Right.
Right.
And in my small little way, whatever way that is, that people either care about, obviously you care about it, but mm-hmm.
Everyone's going to care now.
Well, anyways, I don't have illusions. Or allusions, I can't remember what the right word is, but I don't have, I'm not delusional in thinking that I'm like the next Steve Rubell or something, mm-hmm. but certainly it's nice to have an art world and party that has like art world people and celebrities. And
yeah.
And so we just started something to see what would happen
mm-hmm.
because the people that I'm dealing with like the idea of an art magazine party.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And now more and more art stars and celebrities and interesting people like yourself and other people are showing up to are showing up to.
Yeah, we're getting.
But it's like 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. every Tuesday at the roof of the Jane Hotel.
Yeah, we're getting the word out. But I was noticing that was like in that time that I'm talking about, and I'm old, I know that, and I'm cool. I'm totally cool with it. So that in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, when I was going to those parties, like no one has those parties. By going to that party reminded me how no one's having
because
those
this
parties
is what
anymore.
This is what happened. Mm-hmm. And this is to anybody out there who's involved in the art world. May you be a dealer or a art fair director or somebody who stole a bunch of money from an artist or whoever you are. You know, the art fairs came in, and the art fairs have been around for 10 or 15 years, probably closer mm-hmm. to 15 years at mm-hmm. this point. And everybody went to Miami and
right.
yay, we're all, and I went to Miami for over a decade. I went to Miami this last time and everybody was like, we're partying in Miami. We're partying in Miami. You know, the art world's partying in the art fairs. We're partying in Miami. And the whole sort of social party thing became very corporatized and very fed through business, the business of art.
Right. And tiered.
Tiered, the caste system of whatever.
Right.
It wasn't just like somebody was bringing art world people in to have a regular party.
Right.
And also the nature of social media and all this kind of stuff where it's like doing something in a bar in New York in person.
Right.
Seems like the way people used to do international things in before the internet, and then post internet, it was like, oh, well, we don't need to do that anymore. We can all just like hang out in a chat room or talk on Facebook or whatever it is. So I thought, okay well, if you could go into a small room in New York and have a party
mm-hmm.
in the 80s and they didn't have the internet, imagine if you went into a small room in New York and you had a party and you did have the internet. Not that everybody's taking that, because actually I tried to do a live of Facebook Live and some girl, like drunk girl, like swatted my phone out of my hand.
Well, good.
But I'm just saying, like, I think that vibration is relevant and I don't think anybody's doing it because people have a tendency to move in sort of herds, the mm-hmm. herd mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And also the systemization or systematic takeover of the art world by, I don't hate art fairs. I don't love art fairs, but art fairs are there. And
right. It's a reality.
Let's enjoy them if we can. Last time I went to Freeze, it was sort of like the fire festival, but that's a whole other thing. long winded, blah, blah, blah. But I think people listening get the point without me going on and on and on about it. But it's nice to throw an art world party for the sake of doing a party.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about it is like when you get, it is so democratic because the problem is, I mean, it's funny. I hadn't really thought about this, but in the old days, like, I mean, that's what was so great about those parties. You could be in a room with like Andy Warhol's friends, Gerald Malanga would be there, you know, mm-hmm. and nowadays it's like, it's all tiered. Like,
well, also a lot of those people are either dead or retired.
No, they're all, I mean, but I'm saying like there's no equivalent like that. I'm not saying they'd be
because
around.
Because this generation has been corrupted by the online world and nobody goes out anymore.
No one goes out. But there's also the art world has the thing about your party or the white hot magazine parties, whatever you call them. They're very democratic. Like you could be in a room with, you don't know who you're in a room with. You could be in a room with somebody, like you didn't have to buy a ticket. You weren't in this certain time slot. You're invited to this, but you're not, because I know at art fairs, and I think this is true of all festivals, film festivals, comedy festivals, everybody's always feeling like there's always another party that you're not invited to, right. No matter where you are.
Well, also we're doing an every Tuesday party when there's no big art event going on.
Right.
And then when Freeze Week comes up, we'll do a Freeze themed party. We did an Armory themed
party. I actually had an idea for you for which I'm going to put out here. So anyway, do you know who Alan Midget was?
I've heard the name. Wasn't he the guy who impersonated Warhol and put the wig on and went out to universities?
Yeah, so he one university place, right? So he used to hang out after Warhol died. So
what was his last name again?
Alan Midget.
Midget?
Midget, like a midget.
Oh, okay.
With two T's and an E.
Did you meet him?
Yeah. I mean, not. I met, you know who I met? I met Divine once.
Oh, neat.
And I got her autograph and I lost it when I moved. It's like this whole thing.
I hung out with Amanda Lepore one time.
Oh, really?
That was interesting.
She must be interesting.
Yeah. I was at a nightclub. There was somebody introduced me to her.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Well, there you go.
Very petite.
Really? Mm-hmm. She seems like she'd be small. Do you know who that is, Colin?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay. You had a quizzical look on your face. Mm.
So, yeah.
So here's my idea. Okay. So I think in the spirit of Alan Midget that we should get somebody to dress up as Warhol and go to every party to have like a Warhol character.
David Henry Nobody did that at an opening that I was at.
David Henry Nobody. We should get him to do it.
He would be the person. I've invited him a few times.
That's a great idea.
If you're out there, David.
I'm going to send it. Can I send him an email and CC you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to enlist David Henry Nobody to be the Warhol character.
He showed up at this opening that one time, and he was in a turtleneck with a Warhol wig. He came there especially to mess with me.
But I think he's the perfect person.
He deliberately tried to mess with me at this opening.
What did he do?
He showed up dressed as Warhol and was like trying to take photos.
What was the opening? Was it your work?
No,
or?
It was somebody else's group show. He knew I was going there because I had posted it.
And why you? Why would he pick on you of all people?
Well, he's a friend of mine and we have kind of an interesting dialogue.
Do you pick on...
He knew I would be agreeable to his antics.
Ah.
I feel like
there's more to the story. Do you, Colin? There's a little more that we're not getting
here.
What the antics were, maybe.
Well,
does it involve food, sex, drugs, alcohol?
No.
There's a hesitation, though.
No. It's not nothing.
Let's make it up. Let's make it up, Colin.
It's nothing like that. But he might be a good person.
He's the perfect
person. I was hoping he would show up at the Jane Hotel Tuesday night's party.
No, I think that he should take on the character of Warhol and come to every single party as Warhol.
But it's important to make the distinction between the downstairs ballroom at the Jane and the roof.
Oh,
bar.
Really?
Yeah, they have a different party down there. They actually had a Red Bull party down at the ballroom, and we were so popular that we put the Red Bull party out of business, and everybody from the Red Bull party comes to our party now.
That's what it looked like was going to happen.
That was what happened.
So I saw this couple walk in to the, and then they came upstairs in like this crazy costume.
Oh, well, that was like some kind of 1920s flapper vintage flashback party.
Wow, they were like in costume, but like expensively dressed. Costume like a stylist.
They get some really incredible looking men and women at the Jane Hotel at our party. They show up and they're really a lot of sexies.
Yeah, yeah, really.
And a lot of them like dressed like in like 1920s clothes. And it's really odd. It's a really interesting scene.
Well, yeah, that's what's so interesting about it because you can't really place it in a certain time. Mm-hmm. And I realize, you know what it reminds me of, actually? It reminds me of what I wish the Rose Bar was like. You know the Rose Bar? You do. You don't, Colin. You got to get a date to take you to the Rose Bar.
Isn't that in Uptown?
Gramercy. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Have you been there lately?
No.
You mean the Gramercy Park Hotel?
Yeah, the one with the Schnabel collection.
Oh, yeah. That's been redone and they have the schnobbles up. And
oh, it's so great. It's such a beautiful bar and it's like, you know, hard to get into now maybe or something. You're not going to do that. No, not going to ever get a red rope at your party or any of that crap. None of that crap.
I'm not going to do that.
But they would do that. So the thing about the Rose Bar is that it's like really, really beautiful. And they have this really expensive art from Julian Schnabel's collection. So you actually get to experience the art like it should be in sort of a public.
They had a bunch of Richard Prince's. They had a show of David LaChapelle.
They change it all the time. Yeah. But anyway, it's a really big room and it has this snottiness. So I'm going to say, I'm going to tell people that I think that your party at the Jane Hotel rooftop is an improvement. I'm going to put it, I'm going to say that.
That's nice of you to
because
say.
Because it has a similar vibe, but it's smaller and more intimate and less self-conscious. Mm-hmm. So the thing about the room that you chose or the room there is that at the Jane Hotel is that it's small enough that you can really start a conversation with anyone.
Well, we're say TGIT now. Tuesday is the new Saturday.
Oh, Tuesday is the new Saturday.
Thank God it's Tuesday.
Thank God it's Tuesday. Yeah. So, it's funny because I like observing parties. Sometimes I like engaging. Sometimes I like observing. But I feel like sort of free to do whatever I want there. Like I could sit there and just watch because it's like live theater party.
Right.
But then I also feel like I could walk up to anyone and talk to them. And I don't always, you guys know this about me, that besides my obnoxiousness, there's a really shy person in there.
Oh, no, I don't find you obnoxious at all. I mean, this is New York City. If people with your kind of personality can't exist here, where are they going to go?
Yeah, really. But there's a real shy person in there. Do you see it? You know it.
I think that's the dichotomy that I have a little bit of that myself,
where I have a
little bit of shyness, and then I have a very extroverted aspect.
Yeah.
That alcohol actually brings out
the extroverted.
Too much alcohol makes it really bad.
Yeah.
But I did the math. And I calculated that because we're going from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. every Tuesday at the Jane Hotel, that's 20 hours of partying a month.
Hmm.
See how I wove in a little advertisement?
I like that. 20 hours if you're there the whole time.
See, I'm weaving in a little advertising for the party as I'm talking. It's like, yeah. So anyways, about this every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. to 2 a.m. party at the Jane Hotel.
He doesn't have a problem promoting it.
I'm like
all.
A robot.
What why isn't it on your website? It's not on your website.
You mean
the party?
The magazine?
The party is not advertised on your magazine website.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, why is that?
I'm waiting for it. It's almost at the point where it's historically relevant enough for me to do that.
It's a little underground now.
It's on the verge of actually becoming something that's really legitimately a historical thing.
Uh-huh.
But I don't feel, even with projects that I'm working on, I mean, first of all, I rarely self-publish in the magazine about things that I'm working on.
Oh, I see.
In this case, it's a magazine party for the magazine, so it would work, but I don't think it's a huge secret to people.
No, but I was just looking for it, that's all. And I was like, why is he doing this?
Yeah.
It was a question that came to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a minute left, and I want to make sure, besides, thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. Please stick around. We have such great programming after this. We've got great music, talk, funny stuff. My Thursdays are really the best, but I just want to make sure I go through all the things that I want everyone to know. I want everyone to come to Colin Radcliffe's opening at the Equity Gallery, 245 Broome Street. That's Thursday, April 18th, 6 to 8 p.m., The show's on view till April 27th. Tell us your website, Colin.
ColinJRadcliffe.com.
Spell Radcliffe, for God's sakes.
C-O-L-I-N-J.
Radcliffe.
Do you get the C-L-I-F-F-E.
Okay.
You get the are you related to's and all of that?
All the time.
Okay. We don't even have to say.
And every Tuesday night at the Jane Hotel, White Hot Magazine.
White Hot Magazine Artist Party.
Artist Party.